Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, the first day of October, welcome, 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 friends, to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aarons. It's October.
I can't believe it. It's happened so fast.
I'm actually with you on this one. This one was too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Before the show, we were talking, Cherry. You were telling me you just don't get it when it comes to sports.
I don't.
You just don't get it.
Yeah. People's emotional well-being is tied to how their sports team, how they perform the night before or the day of. Yeah.
And it is mysterious from the outside. But then when you get into it, because I am a sports fan,
mm-hmm.
you start to understand the mechanism, why it affects us the way it does. And at the heart of it, I think, is it's just a vehicle for storytelling.
Yeah.
Some people read books. Some people go to the opera. Some people watch soap operas. Other people watch sports. And you're invested in the teams and the athletes and the narrative arcs that they create. So today we're going to talk about that side of sports, the sociology of sports, the reason it compels us. And we've got a great main guest today, David Green. You might remember him.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, he was co-host of Morning Edition. His latest gig is as host of a new podcast produced right here at WHYY called Sports in America. And it features these great in-depth interviews with all sorts of athletes, big names, little names, medium names. We'll talk about some of his work coming up. We'll tell you about the podcast, but we also want to hear from you. Tell us what sports have meant in your life and in your relationships. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. Hey, YouTube, Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
Yeah, we'll also check in on the Phillies at the end of the show as well.
We will indeed.
So for those, yeah.
It is October, like we just said, which means Phillies playoff baseball is right around the corner.
Right around the corner. So we have our trio of news stories today, and we talked about this yesterday. It has happened. The federal government is officially shut down for the first time in 7 years. Yes, and little local angle here, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, who has been outspoken in his opposition of a government shutdown, he was the lone Democrat who, alongside Republicans, tried to pass that continuing resolution. Pennsylvania Congressman Brendan Boyle, who is a Democrat, called out Fetterman for breaking with the party. He says he's Trump's favorite Democrat, and he's the only Democrat on Capitol Hill that is, quote, doing Donald Trump's bidding for him. And of course, Boyle joined in with other Dems in saying that the shutdown is the party's last and best chance to save health care. And they hope to use this moment to extend Obamacare subsidies that could cause, that could keep millions of Americans' health care prices from doubling in many cases. They also hope to claw back some of the Medicaid cuts in the big, beautiful bill. They also want to stop Trump from impounding funds allocated by Congress. And by the way, the impact will likely be felt from this federal government shutdown. We have about 100,000 plus federal workers in Pennsylvania, and how that impact will be felt will depend on whether the individuals are essential workers, which means they have to go to work, but they won't be paid, or if they're non-essential, which means they'll be furloughed. And there's also threats from the Trump administration of potential layoffs.
And all of this happening while Pennsylvania still hasn't passed its budget. So there's stalemates everywhere right now. And I can't blame the average voter for thinking government just doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
because it certainly feels that way today, October 1st, 2025.
Yeah.
Let's keep it local now.
Yep.
Let's keep it local. Major news in Philadelphia politics. Dr. Alois Stanford is running to represent Pennsylvania's 3rd Congressional District, which, by the way, mostly covers West and Northwest Philadelphia. And this is big. According to the Inquirer, Stanford has the backing of Dwight Evans,
huge.
Who currently holds that seat and is retiring, creating this big open race. Stanford, if you don't know, is a pediatric surgeon, rocketed to fame during the COVID pandemic when she founded the Black Doctors COVID-19 Consortium. She has stiff competition here. State Senator Sharif Street, also running for the Dem nomination, State Reps Morgan Cephas and Chris Rabb, among others. But It's hard to overemphasize the Evans endorsement for Dr. Ayla Stanford, a political neophyte who now has the backing of one of the most powerful politicians in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and with Dwight Evans in her corner, she has a real, real shot. I mean, he'll connect her to the people and put her in places that'll take her a long way. But I have to say, we all kind of like felt this was coming because a recent poll included Ayla Stanford's name on a list of folks potentially running for this third congressional district seat.
The pollsters know.
Yeah, the pollsters know.
Always know.
And 18% of those surveyed said that they'd choose her over the other candidate. She even had a slight edge over the 17% who said that they would go with Sharif Street. Now, this race clearly is very much wide open. But Stanford, she knows how to galvanize people. We saw that during the pandemic. I've seen her speak everywhere she goes. Rooms are packed. So she definitely has that name recognition. But, you know, Street is from a political family. Rab is loved by liberals. Cephas is a rising star. So, I mean, right now we don't know, but she definitely has a real shot entering the race.
Yeah. Anyone who tries to predict how these very open, like 4, 5, 6-way races are going to go is crazy. I don't even try to predict those types of races. However, I will say, like, Stanford has a lot of the ingredients you'd want as a contender. You mentioned name recognition.
Yep.
Really compelling backstory if you haven't read up on her. The one thing that she was missing, you know, on the surface was political connections.
Dwight Evans.
I mean, Dwight Evans, if you don't know the name, he's not just a congressman. He's one of, he's a generational, you know, mover and shaker politician. Him and this woman, Marian Tasca, are kind of the gatekeepers of what they call the Northwest Coalition, which is where some of the most dependable voters in Philadelphia live. These are the voters that turn out in primaries, not just generals. And so if he is going to open his network to her, which goes beyond just endorsement, right? That there's, it's not just saying I support you, but actually opening up, you know, his network to her. She's clearly got a good shot.
Yeah, and she's Philly born, bred. I mean, all of that. So we'll be watching this race, as I'm sure a lot of people will.
Yes. We'll also be watching for the future location of a restaurant that sadly is closing, Cherry. Tell us about that.
A sad day for many who love Mexican cuisine. After 4 years in Kensington, Cantina La Martina will be closing next month. The restaurant, located at D and Kensington Avenue, is co-owned by James Beard award-winning chef Dionisio Jimenez and his wife. And by the way, Jimenez's wife and general manager, they made the announcement on Instagram. They told the Inquirer that the space that they had been operating out of had become financially and logistically unfeasible and that they were looking for a new location. And this space had really become like a bright light during a really rough time in Kensington, right? They won all sorts of, you know, restaurant awards and food awards for delicious and innovative dishes that they served. And people really loved everything that they stood for. They were this bright light, right? And in the comments on Instagram, people were saying, hey, move to Port Richmond. Hey, move to South Philly. That's how much they're loved. But as you mentioned, they do own other locations. They have La Baja in Ambler and a Cantina Outpost in Jenkintown. And they're also going to be opening a Cantina on the Go in Cheltenham. So they're going to be busy.
Yeah, I think this is more than just a restaurant story, as you alluded to, Cherry. I mean, it's a little confusing for people that don't live in Philly because there's different parts of Kensington. There's Old Kensington, there's East Kensington. This restaurant was in the heart of Kensington, the Kensington that you see on the news for all the wrong reasons time and time again. And the fact that this award-winning restaurant kind of seemingly sprouted out of nowhere in the middle of Kensington was for many people a sign of hope. It was not a story. It wasn't necessarily a clean and easy story. And Jimenez had said from the get-go that they were having a lot of problems at the location. They were in constant communication with the city about those problems. And so it always felt a little bit tenuous. But you felt from the outside like, well, all the positive attention and the momentum from that will allow them to stay in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
But even an award-winning restaurant with all of the love and adulation that comes with that was not enough, at least for them, to sustain this operation in Kensington. And as we talk about all of these attempts to move Kensington to its next chapter, this does feel like, at least from the optical perspective, a step back.
Yeah, definitely a loss. By the way, they are planning a celebration of life, and they're going to raise a glass to Cantina on November 2nd.
So which I believe is Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah, they want and they want everybody to come out and celebrate. They said this is not the end. This is a new chapter. And you will see them again someplace else. But it is sad.
You will see us on the other side of this very, very short
talking
break.
Sports.
Talking about sports. Cherry hates sports.
I don't hate sports. I played sports. I just didn't get this.
I'm just kidding.
Don't sick the people on me. Don't sick the people on me.
No, I'm the one I think who's out of step here. People like sports guy, get out of here.
You love sports.
I love sports too much. We're going to talk with David Green, host of a new podcast called Sports in America, right here at WHYY, about why he loves sports, what he sees as the place of sports in America. We want to hear from you. What have sports meant in your life and relationships? Email, call, and stay tuned to Studio 2.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Once you get past all the silly rules, sports are pretty simple. Sports are a great way to tell stories. The players, the teams, the fans, they all get wrapped together in these overlapping, never-ending narratives. Will this player conquer his demons? Will that coach avenge her losses?
And just as you're waiting for one story to end, a new one is born. Before long, you realize you've been watching these stories with a group of people, creating lifelong bonds. Today, we're exploring that side of sports, not the wins and losses, but the way sports captures our attention and creates community.
Our guest today has spent a lot of time watching and thinking about sports long before he was a beloved Morning Edition co-host. David Green was a Pittsburgh sports fan. His newest project is a podcast produced here at WHYY called Sports in America, where he does deep dive interviews with athletes. The first episode with Hall of Fame pitcher Pedro Martinez is out now. David Green, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you both so much. I hear when you join the HYY family, this is the best part of it, being with you two. So
you
it's great
us,
to be
David.
Here. I really appreciate it.
Yes,
although Cherry, I want to hear what you don't like sports, huh? We got to talk about
I
it.
I didn't say I don't like. We're gonna hash this out though.
She doesn't get it.
Okay.
I was being unfair. She doesn't get it.
I'm here to help hash it out.
Yeah, let's hash this out. And by the way, for our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, we'd love to hear from you this hour. Our question of the day is, tell us about what sports have meant to your life and to your relationships. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, leave your comments in the chat.
All right. So, yeah, let's actually start by like trying to sell Cherry on this, David, because I feel like as like a big sports guy living in a public media world, I have to translate to people like why this matters, because some people I think get into public media because there isn't too much sports talk. They're trying to get insulated from that. So how do you explain to a public radio audience why sports matters and why they should invest in these stories that you've invested so much in?
Yeah, I mean, you're re-traumatizing me because the number of times I would come to the Morning Edition meeting at 9 a.m. having spent like a Sunday, you know, like drinking beer and living and breathing a Steelers game, people looked at me like I was an alien. But I really do think there's such deeper meaning. And I think sometimes, you know, your immediate reaction would be like, oh, I don't like sports. I don't, you know, obsess about it as much as other people do. But then you really start thinking more deeply, and sports plays some kind of role in your life. And for me, it was really about family. I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh and then in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And my mom and I were big Steelers, Pirates, Penguins fans. And I just have all of those memories. It's just part of family to me. And even though she passed away almost two decades ago, I feel like I'm still watching games with her. And that means a lot. And I think that everyone has their own version of that. And it's just a window for us. Like, sports is just this place full of stories. It brings us in a room together to think about life lessons and our sports, our culture and families and identity and community. And let's just dig in and really, you know, experience that journey together.
And by the way, I just want to be clear. I grew up, I played basketball in high school. My brother was captain of the football team. My brother was football. And what I don't get, and maybe you can explain this, is how when I moved to Philadelphia, it was very shocking to me how the collective psyche and emotional well-being of the entire city, or many people in the city, was tied to how the Eagles did on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And so I did not get it. You know, you go to the food truck. I was telling Avi and the guy would be all depressed because the Eagles lost. And I did not. That's the part I don't get is this emotional tie. And you even said your childhood, you know, I heard the first episode of the podcast was tied to a sports event. Can you explain deep emotional connection that how, you know, folks feel their highs and lows are so tied to their teams?
Well, I think it becomes so much a part of your routine and life and a statement about your identity and the trajectory of whether, you know, like the feelings you're going to have going into a week are positive or negative. And especially if you're from a city like Pittsburgh, like Philadelphia, it's like the thing you're all talking about at work. It's the thing you're all talking about when you're hanging out in the evening with family. And it's like, you don't want to be talking about how angry you are and how miserable this experience was 12 hours ago. You want to be talking about how much fun you had and how you enjoyed something positive and how the trajectory of the season's looking good and how you love your coach and how you think it's going to be a playoff year. And so it just shapes everything that your week is going to be about. And it's sort of like, do you want to walk into the office or walk into a conversation or walk into happy hour and feel like, oh my God, we're going to talk about how great Sunday afternoon was? Or do you want to be thinking about how miserable this conversation is going to be? So it really, but I think there is more to it because it becomes about, you know, it's like validation of us as a person, as a fan, as a community, as a city. And it's like, a Monday after an Eagles win or a Steelers win, it's like you're feeling like the world has watched your community and they're envious and like you're flying high. And if your team loses 30-0, it's like this feeling of, well, everyone's looking down on us and thinking that, you know, we're not a city that deserves to be in the conversation. And it gets deeper and deeper and deeper.
Totally.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld has this bit where he talks about people using the phrase, we won, we won. And his response is, no, they won, you watched. But the truth is, the we won
is real.
It's real. It's totally
the
real.
Buy-in, yeah.
Like you start to, and it's crazy. You go through this internal transformation. You start, like you watch, let's say the Eagles play the Giants or the Phillies play the Mets. And you're like, those people in New York think they're better than us. And if we win this game, they can't say that for the next, you know, 12, 24 hours, whatever it is. It gets wrapped up in a whole city's psyche and sense of itself. And I bet that's really strong in Pittsburgh, I would imagine, David.
It's so strong. I mean, I talk to Patriots fans and I feel a sense of like insecurity and inferiority around them because they beat us so many times. Mm-hmm. I talk to Bengals or Browns fans and I feel like I own their world, like I am living in their heads. Ravens fans are more complicated because that's been a back and forth relationship. Sure. I still think that, you know, and Eagles fans, it's like that's like, I have a lot of Pennsylvania pride. I was born in Philadelphia. My mom was an Eagles, Sixers, Flyers, Phillies fan, you know, in her childhood. And then we kind of moved to Pittsburgh. But, you know, when the Eagles win a Super Bowl, we're on the other side of the state, kind of haven't won a playoff game in like 2000 years. You know, I feel kind of inferior, like I'm in the wrong side of Pennsylvania. So all that, it messes with your head in so many ways.
I will say I felt like Philadelphia fans had low self-esteem until the Eagles won that Super Bowl. A few years, that first Super Bowl and years. And I think everybody's self-esteem, they had a chip on their shoulder. But winning that Super Bowl changed the psyche of the city.
Started strutting around.
I was walking around with their chests out. It was such a moment for the city. By the way, I want to bring in a caller. We have Barbara from Downingtown on the line. Barbara, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to point out how much I actually love sports rivalries. My dad is, and his whole family are from the Boston area, and I actually ended up meeting my now father-in-law because he was a huge Yankees fan, and then I also found out that as a Michigan fan, he is also an Ohio State fan. And then I met his son. We end up becoming family. But every year we watch all those rivalry games together. And it actually is a nice like point in the year where we get to sit down and watch things together and, you know, a little smack talk, but always in jest and always a good time. And I think it's a great part of our country that we can still take it, you know, take one on the chin and then say there's always next year, you know.
It's like a fight you can have with someone, but the stakes are a little bit lower and you can still come back together afterwards, which sometimes it doesn't feel that way with politics anymore. Yeah. And by the way, thanks for the call, Barbara. And I just want to ask if you're still there. You're the Michigan fan, right?
Yes, 100%.
Good. Good. Go Blue.
Go Blue. I'm with you on that. I was a little worried that you were the Ohio State fan, Barbara. Now I would have had trouble with that.
But that's, I mean, the idea is, so sports, we're not the first to make these analogies or draw these comparisons, but people see it as a proxy for other types of conflicts, but it's almost like a safe form of conflict. Now, it's not always that way. Sometimes sports rivalries do legitimately get out of hand in the real world. But David, I wonder if you could reflect on that function of sports too, of sort of like taking some of these emotions that can be a little, that can have negative side effects, and sort of channeling them in a way that feels a little safer and more communal.
Yeah, I totally live that. And Barbara, what you said really resonates with me. I mean, my wife's whole family is from Northwest Ohio, but they're all Detroit fans. And so back in the Pittsburgh Penguins, Detroit Red Wings, two Stanley Cup runs, I mean, I almost got in a fist fight with my brother-in-law. But it was over sports, and it was like all in good fun, and we were watching the game together, and we hugged it out. Like, had that been something different? You think about a lot of the tension and violence in our country right now, that this is a place where you can just let out your raw emotion and feel like you're part of a team and defending something. But it is a relatively safe space. I also, you know, the thing that I reflect on too, I used to think that sports was escapism. It was like my Sunday, those 3 hours, it was like sacred 3 hours of not having to think about anything else. I don't know if escapism is the right word anymore. I actually think it is a place to bring a group of people together where your political leanings, who you voted for, doesn't matter for those 3 hours, but like you're all sharing a space and sharing something you love. And it's a reminder of the things that you do share, which actually can put you in a mindset of, if you have to have those difficult conversations at some point, you're better equipped to do it because you remember that your neighbor, like, is also an Eagles fan or is also a Steelers fan, even if maybe you disagree on some pretty hard stuff.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about, you know, when we were at, when the Eagles won the Super Bowl yet again, by the way.
Thanks for bringing that up.
I'm bringing that up. I love and that. It was, but reminder. I really...
We're in Philadelphia right now, David. She can bring it up as often as she wants.
But, as much as you want.
But when you look out at the sea of people who came to the parade, I mean, so diverse, age, no matter what neighborhood you're from, no matter, you know, your race, your religion, whatever. Can you talk about that aspect of sports? Because it just brings people together. You see people hugging people, kissing people on the cheek, like strangers. It is just this thing that I think that, and I do get this part, you know, but it's just this thing that kind of brings everybody together. And it's, to me, it's about people. It's about people. Yeah. That's what it's about.
No, Cherry, I think you're absolutely right. And I like, my dream for this show is to be an experience that is very similar to what you saw at that parade. It is a space for everyone to come together and share your own love for sports as a device and a window into amazing stories. Like, we all show up for sports together in our own ways. There are incredible stories there. It's a time that we can spend with each other, you know, thinking about a person's life, an athlete's like trajectory, an athlete's struggles, obstacles, challenges. Sports is just this thing that convenes us. No matter who you are, where you're from, what you look like, you know, what your political party is, we're all showing up together for this thing that inspires us, and that there are extraordinary stories that exist. And so, yeah, I love that image, and that's an image like I'm going to keep with me, because I think the same when I go to a Steelers game. It's like, I'm not thinking about what political party is, whatever. And I'm also willing, you know, if my seatmate wanted to talk about something hard over coffee the next day, I'm game. But for those 3 hours, like, we're sharing this love together in a sense of community.
I got to read this comment from Robert on YouTube. It's a good one. This is a great show and your guest is terrific, but could he please stop talking about the Steelers? Read the room.
I love that. You know, this is one thing as I get more into this relationship in Philly, like, I really do want to understand. People assume that there's this Eagles Steelers bitter rivalry. Like, I love the Eagles. Like, I have way more problems with the Ravens and Patriots. Like, when the Eagles win the Super Bowl, I'm there. It's Pennsylvania pride, but I know there is a lot of hatred.
I don't mind the Steelers. They're so low on the list. I mean, you know, I'd have to go through a whole bunch of other teams before I would, you know, I don't wish the Steelers ill at all.
No.
I want to bring in another caller. This is Marty from Princeton on line three, who has an interesting perspective to share. Hey, Marty, you're on Studio 2. What do you got for us?
Hi. I just wanted to say sports have gotten me through so many things, and I played tennis with my mother through her 80s. So, you know, it's just a wonderful thing. My daughter went to Penn State, so you become one of these people that joined a clan. But what I don't like is the betting. The betting is ruining it for so many people, and I wish they would reverse that decision.
Mm. Interesting perspective from Marty. And look, we're not, that's not the topic of your show, David, but I do feel like what it brings to mind for me is, will sports fandom change
in a way
that becomes unrecognizable? And I think part of it is the betting. So there's more sports betting now, if people hadn't noticed. And what that does for a lot of fans is it makes them focus on individual outcomes, player outcomes. You might be rooting more for a player or a scenario and less invested in that communal aspect. I'm just curious how you see your show positioned in a world where sports fandom might be undergoing something of a transformation.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the kind of you know, really important theme that we want to touch on. And, you know, this is at the end of the day, this is a deep dive interview conversation show. But through that, through learning about relationships and how people interact with sports, that's absolutely something that's vitally important. And you know, on a personal level, I mean, I grew up with a mom who gambled on sports all the time. This is terrible, but when she passed away, one of the first debts that I had to repay was to her sports bookie. I had to go to this guy's house in Lancaster. And so I saw it, and I saw the fun of it. Like, she had fun with friends. You know, they had a bookie and so forth. Now it's the accessibility is amazing, and the endorsement of the professional leagues of this. I mean, to go from not wanting gambling to be part of it at all to, you know, all this money involved, and the accessibility, you can gamble on almost anything anytime, depending on what state you're in. And, you know, there's a lot of risk there. There's an element of fun if it can be in control, but it's a deep concern. And I do think, you know, to your point, it does potentially change the fan experience. I never bet, you know, on Pittsburgh sports teams, and, you know, I never want to focus my, you know, watching the baseball playoffs or watching a Steelers game on, like, you know, the spread.
Yeah.
I want to focus on, like, the joy of winning or dealing with the pain of defeat. So it's a really hard thing. And I do think it could be a transformational chapter in sports, depending on how it goes.
Yep. By the way, I want to read our question of the day again. Tell us about what sports have meant to your life and your relationships. You can call and participate in the conversation by dialing 888-477-9499. You can also participate by emailing studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can drop your comments in the chat. Let's say
Matt has an interesting comment on this exact point that we're talking about here.
Matt says, I used to enjoy watching sports when I was young, but then a lot of things pushed me away. My father was over obsessed. He would scream at the TV and once even blamed my brother for the Eagles' loss. After that, having to pay for watching sports on TV, gambling, huge player salaries and pompous owners, it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
That's according to Matt.
Yeah, and that reminds me a little bit of the plot of the movie Silver Linings Playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anything that you invest in emotionally, you can overinvest in emotionally, right? And I think there's trying to bring that balance to it. It was interesting. You opened the first episode of the podcast, David, talking about how this one play in a big playoff game between the Pirates and the Braves back in, I think, 1992. And it hinges on a run and a slide by this guy, Sid Bream, who, by the way, is from Pennsylvania. And you talk about people still come up to him so many years later and like blame him for ruining their childhood. And he's like, what? Like, I was just doing my job. Like, there is.
You would have done the same thing.
Yeah, you would have done the same thing. And there is a side of this. I wonder if you feel like you could get into this with this podcast of, like, exploring fanaticism and maybe where it goes too far.
Oh, absolutely. And I've thought about that a lot, you know, and I've had my own experiences of, you know, thank goodness I've never, you know, blamed a family member for a loss, or hurt anyone. But, you know, there was a hole in the wall of my childhood home. It wasn't that Pirates game in 1992, but it was when I was listening to a game. They were on the West Coast and they lost their 13th game in a row in San Diego. And I took a baseball bat to my wall. Like, that is not okay. And I mean, you can, you know, that can go south and be harmful really quickly. So that's exactly the kind of thing that we want to be talking about. The relationship between fans and individual teams and athletes, understanding you know, the experiences that made these insane moments that cause us to be so emotional, but also questions like, where are the limits? And, you know, how obsessive can and should you be with something like sports?
Yeah. And I want to dig into the podcast a little bit, because the first episode dropped. You'll be, of course, premiering on WHYY on Friday. But you do a deep dive with Pedro Martinez, famed pitcher from the Boston Red Sox. I want to play a clip from this first episode, one that stood out to me. Like, take a listen to this.
After giving up 2 runs and getting taunted by 60,000 fans, a different pitcher might have broken down in that moment. But Pedro's killer instinct locked in.
I wanted you to be loud because that could distract anybody else but me. And I was accustomed to having that type of pressure. And as soon as they started, Pedro, who's your daddy? It seemed like I turned it up a notch.
And so first of all, I heard of the curse I went to college in Boston. So I heard of the big curse and everything, but I had never heard about this story. So tell us, why did you kick off the show with this deep dive with Pedro Martinez? And then just take a moment before you do that and describe this scene, because for me, having never heard of it, it was very gripping.
Yeah, I mean, Pedro Martinez in those 03 and 04 American League Championship Series between the Red Sox and Yankees played such a pivotal role. There was this famous brawl that you'll hear about. And then there was him nearly losing, you know, this lead against the Yankees and having to absolutely lock in at Yankee Stadium. And I think one of the things that excited me about his story was Pedro, you know, I mean, he's such a star that he can feel untouchable to fans like us, like we're actually watching a show. And we have no idea if the sounds at Yankee Stadium are actually, if he's even hearing them, if it affects him. And we learn through this, like, it really does, like feeding off the emotions of those fans and Yankees fans, like despising him and what it did to drive him to like close out that inning. I love that. You know, I there was another episode where I talked to Cam Hayward, who's a star of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I actually asked him, like, you know, Cam, like when I'm at Heinz Field, Acrisure Stadium, like yelling and screaming and waving this towel, like, what does it do to you? And his essential answer was kind of like, David, I'm not thinking about you at all. I was like, Cam, like, you're breaking my heart. Like, what are you doing? But Pedro, it really, it's everything that I hope this show can be. It's just a big star who had such an impact on a major sport like baseball. He changed the trajectory of a franchise, the Boston Red Sox, that had been through so many years of pain. And he also gets very personal and teaches us lessons about, you know, whether or not we should have fear playing a role when we're striving for greatness. And he's just quite a personality. So I think he was, for those reasons, but particularly like feeling like as a fan, I can actually know what he was thinking in that moment of relationship, made it a great way to start.
Yeah, yeah. You really dug in.
And he's so charismatic.
He is.
And by the way, there's going to be other episodes coming. The Penn swimmer, Leah Thomas, really looking forward to that one. Delaware folks will be interested to know you've got an episode with Elena Deladon, the great Delaware-born basketball star. An episode with Tom Coughlin where he talks about being a caregiver for his wife at the end of life. Tom Coughlin was the coach of the New York Giants. I wonder how easy it is to get athletes to open up and how you go about that. Mm-hmm. And in particular, in an era when there are many podcasts now hosted by athletes, where the athletes tend to ask the other athletes kind of softball questions. And I wonder if it's hard now to get athletes to break out of their shell because they can go to these kind of friendly podcasts and, I don't know, just sort of pal around with their buddies instead of going deep with someone like you who has a journalistic background.
Yeah, I mean, I have found that most athletes really love to know that they're being treated as a multi-layered, more nuanced person than they often, you know, are shown to be on TV or during the game. And it's a matter of just being really upfront about that from the beginning and saying, that's what this show is about. We're going to spend an hour with you. If you're willing to commit that hour, we want to talk about some of the crazy moments that we all remember as fans. But like, I want to understand what got you there. Like, what led to that moment? What was the backdrop? Who are the people who you relied on? Like, get into those things that can really teach us all lessons as human beings and reflect back on us, you know, as a culture and as a society. And I think it's really, you know, it's our team, and I'm working with an incredible team at HYY to make this show. And just a call out to them, because they've been amazing diving into this together. It's very collaborative. And I think they do a fantastic job of just making it clear to, you know, to these athletes and to their teams that we're here to really have a conversation. And that's where you get to the surprises. Like Elena Deladon, you know, of course, like hearing about being, you know, one of the greatest WNBA players ever, but it was her relationship with her sister, who is deaf and blind, and how much, you know, that relationship meant to her and built who she is as a human and as an athlete. And then Tom Coughlin, we all remember him for, you know, being like this tough-nosed coach who a lot of players hated, winning those two Super Bowls for the Giants against the Patriots. But the most important relationship in his life was with his wife, and really the pain and heartbreak of guiding her through her final days dealing with a disease. Those are the kinds of things. And you know, when the conversations go there and we can do it all in 1 hour, you know, I feel like I'm doing my job.
And by the way, Jersey native Carly Lloyd is also one of the subjects of one of your episodes. But I want to ask, because one of the things you sell this show as being is for the fan and the non-fan. So, you know, I want you to talk to non-fans for a minute and just, you know, because it's the stories were so in depth and they'd sort of pull you in and you hear things that you would have never even thought about if you don't necessarily follow sports. So how do you thread that needle and really sort of are able to attract both sides of that coin?
I think it's really, it is bringing out the best in sort of both sides, the fan and the non-fan. You know, it's the fans and all of us who come to sports because like there's so much energy and drama and these extraordinary moments. But the challenge is making those moments accessible. And I commit to doing that on this show, to never have someone listening to me talking about a moment that you're going to feel like, oh my God, I'm not a fan. Like I have no idea what David's talking about. So that's serving the non-fan, giving you the drama and the tension of, you know, great entertainment to keep you there. But then the benefit of non-fans, you know, is that they have really good judgment. They don't want to be there just for, you know, to watch a football go through the uprights. I mean, you know, they would only come to sports if there are great stories there and great people to kind of learn about. And so I want to honor that as well and make the argument to the fan like me, who could listen to sports talk for 3 hours, like the true meaning of sports is about, you know, the deeper storytelling. And so I think accessibility is the really important thing, and being very authentic upfront that, you know, I am here to create an on-ramp for everybody, but to be really diligent about that and really, you know, lean into that.
Let me squeeze in one more caller, if I could. This is Linda from Burlington County on line 2. Linda, we're a little short on time, but I would love to hear your perspective real quick on Studio 2.
I grew up in Arlington Heights, which is outside of Chicago. I was a Cubs fan all my life, went to Wrigley Field every summer with my dad. And just watching the game yesterday was so heartwarming. I mean, it connects my dad, who passed away in 2015, and the Cubs won in 2016, my son in California, my daughter in New Jersey, and it's just part of my DNA.
I love that. And the Cubs won, by the way.
Yeah, one more thing. My favorite player when I was young was Willie Stargell.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, from the Pirates.
Love it. Yeah. Yep, mine too.
Right, my
love
dad it. Would... If I went to bed and Willie Stargell hit a home run, my dad would call me down. Linda, come down.
Aww. Love those memories.
Positive Linda, memories. It takes a lot for me to say this as a Pirates fan, but good luck to your Cubs.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're going to get out of here now. I just want to read a couple. It's interesting how actually contentious the comment section is for this show, because some people really don't get it. I do feel some antipathy towards sports, like Judy, who says, I understand what you guys are describing, but it's multimillionaires playing a game, being paid for the entertainment, poor people invested as if their life depends on it, kind of bothers me. But Dandelion, also on YouTube, says, I get choked up whenever I'm at a baseball game and the crowd sings Take Me Out to the Ball Game. It's something about the communal experience. Obviously, I'm more with the latter than the former, but I get it. You know, some people do feel like we overemphasize this stuff. I feel like this is my way to connect with people.
And I have to say, I do love the communal experience. It's nothing like being at a live game, like in person.
Absolutely. Yeah. Real quick, closing thoughts, David, thing you're most excited for in the upcoming season. You're like, folks, if there's one thing you want to listen for, listen for this.
I actually, I'm going to say that the skeptical listener who you just mentioned, like, I want to bring them in. Like, I really want to show you why, you know, and we're going to take a lot of your concerns about sports and criticism of sports and take them on together. So let's make this a community that is open to fans, non-fans, people who are skeptical of sports, people who are angry about sports, is a place for all of us to come together.
I love it. That's David Green, host of WHYY's new show, Sports in America. You can download it as a podcast right now. It will also air and debut, by the way, this Friday at 2 o'clock on 90.9. David Green, man, I enjoyed the heck out of this. Thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
I enjoyed it too. Thank you both so much.
Yes, and coming up, we'll get a preview of Red October.
Woo!
Talking about the Phillies. After this break, we'll be right back.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrington.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Calling all casual baseball fans, the playoffs are here. The Phillies are making their fourth consecutive appearance in this postseason. A few years ago, they came within a couple of games of winning the World Series. Is this the year they break through?
Yes. Segment over.
Go Phils.
No, we're going to find out soon. On Saturday, the Phillies will host either the Dodgers or the Reds in game one of the National League Division Series. We know some of you are trying to get up to speed as Red October takes off, and there's no one better for that task than John Stolness, co-host of the Phillies Focused Hit and Season podcast, produced right here at WHYY. Hey, John, welcome back to Studio 2.
It's good to talk to you guys again. Man, yeah, let's get it going. Red
let's
October.
Go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. So if you're like me and maybe just checking in since last year's playoffs, right? How does this team sort of compare to last year's squad or even the last World Series run? Give us a list of some of the big changes.
Well, they're certainly more experienced. I think that one of the things that they may have going for them this time around is that they've experienced pretty much every which way you can lose a playoff series. And you know, I joke around, but I do mean that, you know, in some ways, you know, last year they also were able to skip the wild card round because they finished with one of the two best records in the National League. And there's a debate in baseball whether that's a good thing to rest so much and whether it's better to keep playing. And last year, they did not play well in that first round series against the Mets, and their playoffs were done in four quick games. And so the hope is this team's different because they have that as experience now. And I really like the way this group has finished the season. All their starters kept playing. Everyone's head was in the game. Kyle Schwarber had something great that he said before the game on Sunday. He just said, listen, we're just going to see what happens. And it felt like last year they were putting a lot of pressure on themselves. We've got to do it this time. We've got to get it done. And it felt like the moment was too big for them in that spot. So, you know, as far as like what's changed on the field, I mean, it's basically the same team that we've had the last few years. A couple of new guys here, a couple of new guys there. Zach Wheeler out for the playoffs, obviously, is a big loss. But generally speaking, it's the same core, the same group of guys. And, you know, they're going to give it another shot here. Try number four.
Yeah, and Zach Wheeler is like the best pitcher on the team, starting pitcher, and he's out with an injury, which really stinks. But they kept winning after he went out, John, which is amazing. If there's something that keeps you up at night about this team, is it the loss of Wheeler, or is there something sort of tangible or on the field that you feel like, man, if they're missing one thing, it might be this thing?
Yeah, I think losing Zach Wheeler as your game one starter, he was your anchor, and he anchored every playoff series that you essentially had, and you lose that. But Christopher Sanchez is going to finish runner up in the Cy Young Award this year. He's turned into one of the three or four best pitchers in the sport. So they've essentially swapped out Zach Wheeler for Christopher Sanchez. Aaron Nola's not going to have the kind of role that he had in previous years. He might pitch game four of the championship series if they get that far, but he's not going to make a start here in this opening series for the Phillies. And so the thing that really, though, keeps me up at night is the offense and what has done this team in addition to some bullpen meltdowns. But really, it's been the offense disappearing at the wrong time. That's what has ended these three previous playoff runs. The offense was going great, getting big hits, lots of two-out hits, lots of big home runs, and then it's as if the faucet turns off. And I don't know if this group is going to be any different from those previous groups. And if they are, if the same thing happens, is the pitching good enough? Can the starters get them as deep? Can the relievers hold late leads or keep games close? You know, but here, something to kind of ease your minds, every other team is worried about the exact same
things.
That's
true.
And it's a wide open field.
Yeah. I want to talk about the fans a little bit because 31,000 people bought tickets to the Inner Squad game tonight. I mean, this isn't even a real game, but fans are really excited. And I want to talk about what's the vibe like around, you know, this year's heading into the postseason around Saturday. And I mean, do people feel the fact that the Phillies have repeatedly gotten so close and no cigar?
Oh, they've noticed. They felt it. If you're online at all for a minute or two, you know, after every loss, it's like an Eagles game. It's like, oh, they got no shot. Ah, this team's a bunch of chokers. This guy can't pitch. It's just the way we are because, it's, you know, we react to, you know, you're investing 2.5 hours of your night into watching a team. And when they lose, it's like, you know, so you get that intensity built up. But, you know, I think the fans have been awesome this year. And I think generally speaking, the vast majority of the fan base is optimistic about this team's chances. And if you just zoom out a little bit and come out of the Philadelphia bubble just a bit, you can see the Phillies in every publication, every major sports organization out there has the Phillies as the favorite to win the World Series. The betting folks have the Phillies as the favorite to win the World Series. I mean, there are reasons for Phillies fans to be optimistic. And obviously you're getting 31,000 people on a Wednesday night at 6 o'clock to go watch a game that's going to be between an intra-squad game between players on both teams that doesn't even count and may not even go more than 6 or 7 innings. This fan base is ready to host a parade and they are fired up for this baseball team.
Oh yeah, we're ready. We are ready. We are ready for Red October. I hate to even bring it up before the playoffs have begun, but when we talk about the stakes here, like if this doesn't go well, then what? Because I get the sense, John, that this team's been together for a while. They're getting a little older, a little longer in the beard. And if this doesn't work, then like, you know, then what next year? I mean, give us a sense of those stakes.
Well, I don't know what more can change. Obviously, Trey Turner's going to be here. Bryce Harper's going to be here. They've signed contracts that will take them out through the rest of their careers. They've got all of their pitchers, with the exception of Luzardo, are signed for multiple seasons after this. You've got your closer who's going to be here for another 2 seasons after this. If something falls apart in the playoffs, you might see some of the other guys who aren't here on long contracts. Maybe you move some of those guys in trades, but they tried doing that this offseason a little bit. They wanted to make more changes this past offseason, and they just weren't able to pull the trigger on anything. So, and I think they're going to re-sign Kyle Schwarber. I think JT Realmuto is probably coming back. So if this group doesn't get it done, the only change I can see that would make a big difference is if they decided to move on from Rob Thompson. And
the manager,
I don't think there's any appetite in the front office to do anything like that, even if they fall short again. We'll have to see what that looks like. If they do fall short, how does it happen? That could impact things, but I don't, even if they lose and fall short, they don't have a lot of runway to make a lot of changes.
This is the team.
And so let's leave on a high note.
Yeah, we got to do a high. I'm sorry.
I want you to help us visualize if the Phillies make it all the way. And what needs to happen over the next few weeks? Let's speak it into existence. Let's manifest for a moment, John. Mm-hmm. You have the floor.
Okay. What happens is Christopher Sanchez comes in and he's the ace that you need to have in a playoff series. You have Ranger Suarez and Jesus Luzardo continuing to pitch exactly the way they have been. You've got Phillies players in the lineup. Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, yes, but the guys in the bottom of the lineup getting big two-out hits, taking advantage when another team makes an error, the Phillies taking advantage of that mistake, them being the aggressors when other teams make mistakes and them not being the ones to make mistakes. And then you get late leads. Juan Duran is saving games, it's making 4, 5, 6 outs. So you might need him for 2 innings at a time. Doesn't matter. All hands on deck, right? They just figure out a way. All season long, they have figured out a way. They get swept by the Mets for 3 games in New York. They come back the next game. Schwarber hits 4 home runs, and they're off and running again. This team has been impervious this year to these kinds of setbacks. That's what it takes in the playoffs. That's the dream scenario. You lose a game, it happens. How do you respond the next game?
Resilience.
The resilience. We've seen it from this team more than any team we've seen in the past few years.
Oh, right. I love it.
John, by the wind beneath their wings.
My sister was at that 4-home-run game. I'm so jealous, wow. By the way. John, yeah. Stolness from the Hittin' Season podcast. But if you want to know what's going on with the Phillies, you got to listen to Hittin' Season, yes. podcast. John, thank you for your time on Studio 2.
Thanks, guys.
And by the way, I want to correct something I said earlier. Senator Fetterman was not the only Democrat who voted for the continuing resolution. Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada also did that. But he was the lone Democrat from Pennsylvania. That's what I should have said. By the way, we're going to wrap up the show and thank our producers.
Yeah, let's thank them. Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Adam Staniszewski engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm ready for those Phillies. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. I'm glad we ended it on a good note.
Yeah, thank you for doing that, by the way. I was Debbie Downer over there.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us.